Hey there, welcome to Podmass. Are you ready? Let's hang out. It's Podmass. Podmass is like the advent calendar of podcasting traditions that was started by some podcaster somewhere who recognized that during the holiday season there were a lot of people tuning in. This is mostly because we're traveling and dealing with family and other crap we don't want to deal with, but most recently because so many of us have been stuck at home with the pandemic. And so Modern Witch is joining the festivities this year by dropping an episode every day between Yule and the New Year. That's like 11 episodes of Modern Witch. And I don't know what it says about you that you're tuning in to a bunch of witches for holiday cheer, but whatever, it's cool. I mean, come on in, no judgment. Again, it's Podmass, and you're listening to the Modern Witch Podcast. Thanks for tuning in.
What is that? It's a little bag made from the skin of a toad.
Does it matter? She's tampering in dark sided stuff!
Yet in our own supremely rational time, there has been a dramatic rebirth of the ancient arts of witchcraft.
You're listening to the Modern Witch Podcast with Devin Hunter.
On the third day of Podmass, Modern Witch gave to me the last little tiny bit of our discussion on Motherland. It's actually not tiny. It has been three episodes. This is the third episode. So many episodes have been had about Motherland Fort Salem, but you know, it's Podmass, and it's the gift that keeps on giving here at Modern Witch. But this is the last episode of Motherland Fort Salem, and then tomorrow Storm and I are actually going to start recording our Wheel of Time series. We started researching that tonight. That's like a whole, oh, it's a can of worms. You're getting a can of worms for Podmass. Anyway, it's all happening. It's all happening real. This episode of the Modern Witch Podcast during this Merry Podmass, I almost did it, is of course brought to you by the fine folks over at the Modern Witch University, which I, you know, may or may not have something to do with. And, so thank them. Be one of them, maybe. Go to modernwitchuniversity.com and sign up for a class. Then you could be one of those people and be supporting the show. You could also join the Patreon and support that way. Modern Witch Official over on Patreon. Even have a subscription box where you get monthly goodies from yours truly. And usually, it's like stuff I make. Can you imagine? Yeah. Anyway, so lots of love to you. Again, Merry Podmass. And oh goodness, I love you. Thanks for coming. Thanks for downloading. Thanks for being part of the magic here. And once again, a Merry Podmass to you. This is the Modern Witch Podcast with our third part and final part to our deep dive into Motherland, Fort Salem. And this will actually get you totally caught up. So if you've been watching at the end of this, you'll totally have the knowledge you need to make it through. And also, if you haven't been watching, then you don't even need to see the first two seasons because you will have listened to this series of podcasts. Although I do recommend you actually do watch the episodes because it's actually a really good show, as you know. Anyway, I'll quit talking. Lots of love. Merry Podmass. I'll see you on the flip side, folks. This is the Modern Witch Podcast. Been going on with Scylla and our amazing Anacosta, and that she finds out that it is the Camarilla who has been doing these attacks, and they are picking people off essentially in the session. And that's basically they're going in where there isn't a military presence, and they've just been taking people and doing all kinds of interesting things. So chances are there's a lot more bad things to come that we don't know about because of the way that they've, you know, been taking witches' voices or, you know, vocal cords out and things. So it makes it all very dark and scary suddenly, like even in more intense kind of way. And one of the really powerful scenes that happens is that Anacosta and our amazing Scylla. At this point, I love Scylla. I didn't like her at all because she was like this untrustworthy character, completely like just scaly in the first season. And then you find out in the second season, you just love her. Like I just fell in love with her character. I think she's really cool. But they end up infiltrating a gathering on Halloween. So while, you know, our main characters are doing their thing with trying to communicate with the dead, they end up, Scylla and Anacosta end up in a situation where they infiltrate the Camarilla.
And they go into what is essentially this like ritual that is being held in some theater where they are about to sacrifice this little girl that went missing. We mentioned that they had that, you know, all they knew was there was this little girl that had gone missing.
Tiffany.
Tiffany has been found.
Right. And this, I will say that this particular scene was probably, it was, if not my favorite, it's definitely up there, you know, so they walk into this and let's set the stage. You said that it's like in this big theater that they've rented out. Everyone is dressed up in like formal wear. Everyone's wearing identical masks to give it extra culty creepiness. And, but it's all like this big well-to-do. And so they go in and they realize, oh, the big part of this big camera speech they're going to give, this rally cry, is that they're going to sacrifice a witch. And they have poor little Tiffany is there, and they're now tying her up, and they're going to execute her in front of everybody.
And however Anacosta is there, and Scylla is there, and they're not going to let this happen, of course. And
they're a little disempowered because, you know, of course the Camarilla uses that technology to block their ability to use the work. So Anacosta has to go to like find the power and shut off the power. Yeah. And so she does that. And Scylla basically has to deal with things knowing full well that she doesn't have any powers, but she still has to intervene. And so they're going to kill Tiffany. And she steps up and says, oh, well, you should let her go. They're like, why would we do that? Well, because you could do me instead. I'm a witch. And so she reveals herself to everybody, and she has
no powers. Doesn't just say that she's a witch. She doesn't even just say she's a witch. She says, I'm a witch, and I am the spree, and I have killed hundreds of innocent people. And, you know, I don't feel sorry at all. Right? and then that is when that moment, right, as that clicks, because she's got no power. So she's fucked, right? They're going to jump her. They're going to kill her.
She's just hoping amongst hope that Anacosta finds that power switch. And of course, Anacosta finds it, but somebody else finds her. Yes. And so there's a big battle. There's she can't throw the scene. Switch yet.
But
she
kicks their ass.
Of course.
She's able to flip the switch. Of course, perfect timing for Scylla, who is downstairs about to get jumped. And in fact, I think she starts to get jumped, and then she's able to just release all hell, because Scylla is a super badass, powerful terrorist witch who knows all kinds of shit she's not supposed to know about.
Right. She gives out like this witchy hiss scream that like knocks people back across the room.
It's beautiful.
It was beautiful.
And then, so the little girl, Tiffany, is saved. And as a result of this, and the last thing that happens kind of in that scene is very important, is there's a spell that we haven't talked about that is very, very awesome. And it shows up a lot, and it's a spree spell. Cause it's obvious that the spree have different magic than the military uses, even though they use the military's magic.
They call it off canon work.
Yes. Off canon. One of these spells is a shape-shifting spell in which they are able to steal somebody's face, basically, and take their form,
like copy it.
And so she goes over, she, you know, to the guy who is the leader of the cell for the Camarilla, who was about to kill this little girl, and she steals his face. And so that comes into play in the next episode, which is when we find out. So towards the end of this episode, however, they kind of Tally comes and to go be with our amazing Rael, and because she's been off doing her own thing, finding her own information about what's going on, you know, with the spree and whatnot, they find out that it isn't the spree that's been doing things. It really is the Camarilla. They're the ones attacking. And just as they find these things out, the Camarilla attack and kidnap them both. And so we get this, kidnap Rael. Right. When that happens, shit gets real. All right. So big thing that I would say happens in the next episode is that we end up having Rael fighting for her life because she is paralyzed. She's been captured by the Camarilla. And they're extra angry now because they just had one of their cells get obviously attacked by witches, and things happened. And so they're extra angry. They're going to take their anger out on this witch. And they know that Rael is special because they have intel that she is the witch bomb. And so they are doing things to Rael throughout this episode that are torturing her, trying to get her to respond with this thing, and she's not responding to it. So they're just going to instead infect her with witch plague. This is their plan. Now, as this happens, of course, you know, things are moving. There's this big effort to go save her. And we end up discovering that her mother is there. And her mother is part of one of the factions from the Spree that is there to basically shut this Kimmeria thing down, but also rescue Rael. And her mother ends up sacrificing herself to save Rael from the witch plague, essentially. And she doesn't really get to see her mother, but for all of maybe 5 seconds before she is like literally picked up and like drug out of this chamber. And the witch plague eats her mother alive. And it's a very, very,
it's traumatizing. Sad,
it is. It was like, holy shit. They have these scenes where it's like, just cause it's like so in love with the characters and you're just like there for their development. And then suddenly something happens and it just feels like almost in a Game of Thrones style, just like all lightheartedness drops out of the room and it becomes very serious and you're like, oh shit. So, and this is one of those scenes that I was just like, I had to stop. Like after the end of that, I was definitely pacing and walking around and be like, okay, I need to watch puppies now. Like there needed to be puppies. There needed to be, you know, that was the thing. So that happened. So was there anything up to this? Am I missing anything up to this point, Storm, before we get into them going to make the final push to get Nikta and all the fun stuff?
No, I think. Yeah. No.
Okay. Keep going. So Rael is rescued, the team is reunited, and we're down to what I think is the last three episodes. So we've been rambly because we love this and we're very big nerds, and we're also trying to make sure we're not getting things wrong, but undoubtedly we will, and we know that you will let us know. And so so I know we're being a little rambly, but what do you do when you, I mean, it's so hard to, you know, summarize a
I mean, there's so much going like on this. And obviously there's we're so not much going able on. To touch into everything.
Yeah.
But it is so multi-layered. It's woven together really nicely. I think the next biggest thing is I really want to talk about more about the mycelial connection, because you this know is coming into play.
That's very important, and why I think that happens, a big development with that actually happens in the next episode. With the whole Nikta stuff, and then there, yeah. So this is all building up for that. So let's talk about that. So we talked about the mushroom thing that lives underneath Fort Salem. We said that Rael has a strange connection to it, and at first this connection was not good, or it was not understood, right? Because she went up and she went to go touch it, and essentially it attacked her. At least it looked like it had attacked her. And so they were all kind of treating her for a big part of the first season, like, oh, you silly thing. You got too close to a lion and you got bit. It was like, that was kind of the vibe. And then you realize that the mycelial network actually did something to her. It actually reached out and kind of stung her. And that is what gives her this witch bomb ability, is it's actually connected to this mushroom. And what was particularly interesting, and I know that you have a lot to say on this, so I will shut up here in a second, but what I thought was particularly interesting is that we end up finding out that throughout this season, that what the mushroom has done is it has essentially built inside of her throat a third layer of vocal cords that is only its thing. Yeah,
at least. And so she not only has like the regular witch powers, but now she's got this whole other like beyond, you know, she can make these sounds that are just that you can't replicate. The other witches can't replicate. And so she's unique and specifically powerful, you know, among the witches now. And this is what specifically is able to save her from succumbing to the witch plague. You know, her mom, is able to finally save her, but this mushroom goddess, you know, within her, keeps her protected. And then that's what happened during the witch bomb. You know, she was threatened with a deadly threat. And so it annihilated everything that was threatening her, just as a response, just a non-thinking response. And so when she gets infected by the Camarilla with the witch plague, it's curing it, but then it keeps coming back. It can't get rid of it altogether. But it's the only reason that she's alive is because she was able to hold it off long enough for her mother to take it, you know, from her. Because of course, that was the particular methodology of the healing that her mother would do as a fixer. She would go take the illness, at least temporarily. It wouldn't kill her, but it would like, you know, do it. But with the witch plague, she took it from her daughter and finally succumbs to it.
So she is, we obviously find out that the witch bomb itself is absolutely connected to this mushroom this mycelial network that's living underneath Fort Salem. We also find out a lot in the last three episodes about where it comes from, what its intentions are exactly for Rael. And so a lot of big things happen. So hold on to your britches, people, because it's about to get real. So they now go, and so we have this mushroom thing going on. We know that it is connected to the spirits of the witches who died in battle. And we know that it has a particularly potent power that hasn't really ever been seen before. So, and it's an oddity to itself. Nobody, even Sarah Alder, doesn't really understand it. They don't really know what's going on with it. So they are now sent on a mission essentially to go and get Nyctopatan. Nyctopatan, they know where she is. They are able to trace her because she has attacked Alder. And this is what finally forces them to go after Nycta. Is that there is a particularly brutal working that Nycta has done that forces Alder to go through extreme amounts of pain, and all of her biddies are almost destroyed, if not, you know, I think they're all kind of left pretty fucked up as a result of this. And person sacrificed as to make this happen is actually is somebody who Scylla knew as a member of the Spree. That so we knew there was something going on, but it was this whole series is so well written because these things are so paced throughout, and you're like, what is this? Oh shit. And so this was something she actually tried to talk the guy out of, and he said, no, I have to go do this. And so he basically sacrificed himself so that Nyctopatan could do this working to attack Alder and to basically fuck her up and her biddies up and all of it. So she's in very poor shape. Sarah Alder's in very, very poor shape.
I will say, I don't want to say what it was because I think that will take away some of the shock, and it was meant to be shocking, but it was a shocking scene.
We can just say well done. It was like silver down the throat. It was like Game of Thrones fucking deep shit. It was like, oh fuck. And I don't know how it worked, but it was bad. Like this poor guy was just like metal.
Well, I mean, it does get revealed exactly how it worked, later on, but at first we're just like, what? And, you know, it happened while Alder was like in her protected room, right. And so like,
yeah, they basically have a magical antechamber on base. And that is supposed to be where Alder and anybody, like, you're safe from, you know,
a magical attack and everything. And yet she's attacked there.
Yeah. So it's all very like, what the fuck is going on? Right. So they're sent to go capture Nycta. Nycta, of course, does not make this easy. She puts them through a whole series of magical trials. This is the mindfuck episode. This is one that if we really dove into a storm, we would be talking about for an hour. So we're not going to do that.
You mean an hour more?
Yeah. Another hour. Yeah. just on that one particular episode, even though it was only 40 minutes long. It's this really trippy episode where basically Nycta has these magical, this magical minefield where they could just easily step on a spell and it makes them have severe delusions. And they have to kind of find their way out of the delusion before it eats them, basically kills them.
And it's carried through the sound of bats, which I thought was just really amazing. You know, these flocks of bats that would fly through the forest. And at some point, Tally's able to see with her special ability, hey, there's actually a magical sound coming from the bats. So the sound of the bats is a way to like kind of transmit this, you know, psychoactive magic, you know, that is being, right. you know, wrought on these people, in which they see their own childhoods and their own families, but yet twisted against them. Their shadow is coming up to taunt yeah. them and try to kill them.
And this plays itself out in a couple of different ways. And we also have to mention that Scylla is with them. So Scylla is their guide to going after Nycta, right? So Scylla, being a member of the Spree, knows where the hideouts are and knows the Spree magic, essentially. So she's with them. And if it weren't for her, Rael would have been
They'd all be fucked.
So she was able to say, oh no, this is, and she warned them, this is what's going to happen. Watch right. out, watch your step, basically. And then almost immediately it happened to everybody.
And it wasn't like she was totally immune, because she does get sucked into it herself at some point, you know, later on, but at least in the beginning attacks, you know, it's at least seen that, you know, she keeps her head on her shoulders and she doesn't fall into the delusion.
The whole point is being able to like get out of the trap. And of course, Scylla knows how to get out of the trap. So she knows what to look for. So even when she falls, you know, victim to it, when she recognizes what's going on, she gets out of it very quickly. The other ones don't exactly know how to do that in the same way. And it's presented in a training thing that they do earlier on, but it's like very intense and it's a whole thing. So it works out with probably the most severely with Abigail, who ends up having kind of a fucking meltdown and summoning up a couple giant tornadoes and then trying to fuse them together, because she's hallucinating that she has to like protect her family and that she's like trying to protect everybody. And so she's spending herself, like she's exhausting all of her energy, and she can fry herself and kill herself this way. And so she's totally out of it. And I think she's even like kind of hovering, and they're trying to like, you know, snap her out of this, because they've all been able to do it, but she hasn't been able to do it just yet, because hers is particularly intense. And she's about to die. And oh my goodness, I thought we were going to lose her. I mean, at least fry her. I thought we were going to like, she was going to be incapacitated. Like I thought that was going to happen. It didn't quite happen that way, but they're able to get her out of it, thankfully. And move on to actually capturing Nycta, which wasn't the easiest process. There is a fight that goes on in the woods. And eventually Tally, of course, with her awesome abilities and her weird connection at the same time to Nycta, is able to find her. And
And I'm glad you brought that up, because I think a big part of that, like kind of pairing up Nycta Batan with Tally Craven, really kind of was showing Tally as an open heart, you know, an open heart and an open mind. You know, Tally doesn't have as much trust as she had, you know, for the way their history books were written, right? Because she knows better, and she doesn't trust the military as much as she did before. And so she actually wants to hear the true story. So she's going in there, yes, I'm here to capture you, but I'm not here to like try to rough you up or even disrespect you. I'm here to hear your story. And I thought that was a really good kind of element to insert, you know, into this. It just kind of added to the complexity of how these characters are relating with one another. And yes, and as you said, it wasn't easy, you know, so there's definitely a struggle.
Didn't work out well.
Things were said. Things happened, and right. But finally, of course, Nycta is captured, and they put on this really cool like collar,
yes.
Which presumably stops them from using their vocal cord.
It was like a muzzle kind of.
It's like,
thing.
Well, kind of, yeah, it's like this, but yeah, kind of over their throat
yeah,
and
over their throat. Yeah, it was trippy. Okay, so that happens. She's brought. Nycta is then brought back to Fort Salem, and as they pull up, and you know, Alder comes out, and the other military brass come out to basically receive her, right? As this, look what we brought home, you know, look what the cat drug in kind of a deal. It is obvious that Tally is acting weird, And so she is, and there's a couple of allusions to it. Like when they're on the transport, the other, you know, other girls are talking and everyone seems kind of happy. And Tally's just kind of being a little weird. And
she's just morose and silent.
She's just kind of morose and silent. And you know, yeah. So they get there, they go to present her, and Tally says something very unlike her. And she, you know, they present Nikta Patan. She's down on her knees. And she is incapable of speaking at this point. So that she is muzzled up somehow. And she's trying to basically, you know, tell people like some, you know, what we think is pleading for mercy. It is not pleading for mercy. Instead, we find out is that we suddenly see our amazing Tally take a run for Alder, as if she's about to attack Alder. And luckily, guess who sees this, but none other than our amazing Rael. And Rael, you know, reaches out and basically cracks her and brings her to her knees. And it is revealed that spree magic where they're able to steal faces, that's exactly what had happened. Nikta had traded places with Tally and was, of course, going to use that opportunity to try to kill Alder. Didn't work out that way, of course. And so Nikta is then imprisoned. And as that goes down, the rest of the military suddenly becomes very aware that Sarah has been lying for a very long time, not just about the spree and the origins of the spree, but a bunch of other cover-ups too. And this all causes the growing distrust of Alder to come to a head in a very, very big way, where essentially she is kicked out. She is kicked out essentially, right? Like they come through and they say, hey, you're no longer in charge here. You have misused your trust, because she's also been doing other things. There's a couple of scenes throughout the series where she meets with the president. And she obviously uses a certain spell to, and I think they call it puppetry or something like that, where she gets the president to agree to things that the president doesn't want to agree to.
Right.
And she does this, of course, in an effort to try to relieve pressure that her and the military are being put under to provide answers and to do things.
And we do see this happen, of course, in as far back as season one, where we see General Alder do puppetry of the president, you know, literally kind of,
that's what it is, puppetry,
force, yes. Yeah, force her actions. And Alder has this whole speech, you know, that she had written, and she's reciting this speech like in her magical room with her biddies all kind of chanting with her. And then you see that the president giving that same speech word for word, and you can kind of tell she's under duress. And then after that, the president wasn't feeling well. So you definitely get this idea that like, oh, this poor president is being magically manipulated, you know? So that's a bigger concern as well. You know, this whole, like, part of the government is actually secretly being controlled to a degree by the witches.
Right. So this is kind of all, you know, the military needs and all of the government needs, right? This whole discovering where Nikta was really in charge, and she was, you know, really, you know, obviously really connected to Alder in this way, it's the last straw, right? And so they're able to do all the final little movements that they needed to do in order to kind of basically, you know, dethrone Alder, so to speak. And even, you know, coming to the decision to later on in the next episode to discontinue the Biddy program. So Alder was just going to die off basically as the Biddies died off. And it's pretty intense. I mean, it ended up being
very emotional. And I will say it was an exquisite performance by Lynn Renee, who plays Sarah Alder. Yeah. I was just really struck that he or she could play this character that is a very strong woman, you know, in this position of incredible power and influence, but also just responsibility, and how she shouldered that responsibility, you know, this whole time. And here she is being emotionally just like pierced to her core.
Right.
And yet duty is what guides her life.
She always favors duty. So in the second to last episode, which is kind of where we're at now, a lot is revealed. I mean, a lot is revealed. We find out about the origin of the mycelium underneath Fort Salem. We find out about a lot of the little secrets and things that have been going on. We also find out more about the Camarilla. Like, a lot of stuff goes down. So Tally and Abigail are at this point, because they, you know, again, all of this distrust has been just thrown at Alder for so long. Abigail and Tally are in a place where they're like, no, there needs to be change. Like, things aren't right. This isn't the way, you know, we're being given this, you know, these directives, and we know these are the casualties. And basically, this shit isn't being run right. We've got a problem, and it's causing people to die. Right. And so, like, what's going on here? You've been lying to us, and not just you, but, you know, these other lies are then built on, you know, those lies, and it ended up having this huge systemic issue. A lot going on. So they're kind of pressuring for change, and it causes a series of, I mean, just they're kind of impactful in the series of events that ends up getting Alder put on what is essentially trial, I would say. I mean, that's probably the best way to kind of put it. And it's like a military tribunal. It is summoned to decide what exactly to do with her.
Well, no, I mean, there isn't really a trial. It's kind of more behind the scenes, where the president says, hey, we know what's happened, you know, and this is what's going to happen now. You're going to resign.
And no, I'm trying to get to the point where, oh yeah, yeah. But you're absolutely right. But I'm trying to get to the point where Alder has to resign, and the elder Bellwether takes over as in the military.
It's a ceremony for her to like basically pass the, you know, I'm retiring, you know, and I'm passing the power over. Yes. But yeah, but this is against her will, but she accepts it.
And she gives a very bullshit kind of, at first, it's a very, you know, obviously written for her kind of a vibe, like with the speech, and it's not good enough for Tally, who steps out and says, basically, it's not good enough. And she ends up, there's one, of course, it's one of these things that you just hear about, right? All of a sudden the writers were like, hey, let's do this thing. There's some right that, you know, that was able
ancient
to claim,
witch
some
right.
Ancient witch right, where they
she's invoking
the
right of proxy.
It was,
you know, and now I challenge you to a fight of the death.
Yeah.
Fight to the death.
And
the president's like, shut this down. And Petra is like, I can't. It's out of my hands. This is ancient witch law.
I can't do anything about this shit. This has to go down. So, and it ends up being some big shit. So essentially it ends up being a big fight. We'll put it that way. And very beautiful fight scene, actually, in a very Amazon Wonder Woman kind of way.
With these whips.
It's very cool.
It's very cool. But obviously, Sarah Alder is over 300 years old. She's the leader of the military. She is no stranger to armed combat. She wrote the book on armed combat. You know, so she fairly easily defeats, you know, Tally. And before striking the killing blow, another person steps forward and says, I challenge by right of proxy.
Right.
And then the next person does, and the next person does, until basically the entire camp, you know, comes. Yeah. But that everybody joins. And so it just overpowers Sarah Alder. And then the truth is then revealed. You know, Tally gets up and is able to say her speech and
explain, you know, to everyone why Nikta created the spree. And the basically revealed this huge cover up that she knew, because she obviously was part of all of these things throughout the season and whatnot, but that nobody else really knew. So she felt that the way that things were being handled was very cover up. And she was like, no, this can't be the case. This is what causes the spree, right? Us covering things up is what caused the spree. Why are you going to do this again? And it's just going to perpetuate this thing. So it was beautiful. It was really well done. It was pretty powerful. So that happens while this is happening. That goes down. We then have a scene where we find out essentially what is going on with the mycelium network. We find out that the mycelial network has a plan for Rael. Right about this time, though, there's an attack, of course, right? So the this whole thing with Alder ends up, you know, or kind of starts to finalize. She finds out the Biddy program is going to be, you know, taken apart and all these things. She's like, okay, well, you know, what else are we going to do? And they're attacked. And they are attacked by their ancient enemy, right? And this is a big thing because there's witch plague now kind of rolling through the all of like the whole campus of Fort Salem, just doing what the witch plague does. The Camarilla have infiltrated the like the base itself. So there are people running through killing witches and you know trying to basically get to where Alder is usually you know kept up.
Right.
And essentially we find out that through a whole series of things, the vice president's daughter was poisoned with witch plague. And she is basically the source for the witch plague on the campus.
Which I will say kudos to the effects people, you know, on the show, because this was actually when you see her all infected with the witch plague, it is like, it's an amazing effect, you know, the witch plague coming off her in these black tentacles and she does. And it also tugs at the heartstrings because she doesn't actually know what's going on.
Right.
You know, she's somehow not consumed yet by the plague, but she's just exuding it. And it was a really powerful scene.
And they are basically Rael and the others are forced to kill her to save everybody.
Yeah. And so they basically, you know, Abigail Bellwether, you know, kind of summons the winds to like, you know, pick her up into the air. And I believe she's like struck by lightning in order to
something.
And they're just, but it's all three of them together doing it. And they're heartbroken that they have to do this.
Cause they've grown to love this girl too. Like that's the other
thing. And especially Tally took her under her wing. You know, she was really felt particularly, but there was no way. I mean, she was going to kill everybody.
Yeah.
And so it was an act of self-defense. It was an act of heroism.
But it was obviously recorded.
It
was recorded.
Delicate because it was recorded. There were news cameras, at
there,
the scene.
Because they were covering the transfer of power in the military.
Right.
And so they were still, some of the cameras were still there. They picked up the scene of the vice president's daughter being slaughtered essentially
by witches.
And of course they don't have the details to anything that's going on. They just see the vice president's daughter being killed.
Right.
So not good. So we get to when the next episode kicks in, we find out a whole bunch of stuff that's been going on. So we'll just kind of summarize everything because I feel like I might have missed the placement of a very important thing, which is where the mycelial network comes from. All right.
Well, there's that. And I don't know if we mentioned that during the attack, Sarah Alder's biddies are killed.
That's right.
And without her biddies, she immediately starts aging. But since she's so old and so powerful, she kind of ages into she kind of looked like Groot to me.
Yeah.
And you know, she looked like she was made out of a tree.
Yeah.
And so just basically on death's door. And that's where we kind of leave off with Sarah Adler for a while.
Right, right. Exactly. Yes, that's an important thing. So important because that's when you don't think she's going to die. But then when that happens, you're like,
right.
Oh, no,
and then you're like, oh, okay, over. She's obviously not going to be in season three. Yeah. So, how
or
sad,
will she,
it, you know, or will she, da, da, da.
We find out that the mycelial network or mycelial network, the mycelium, cause we're also Star Trek people. That's the thing. but so the mycelium were basically created out of her sorrow, out of Alder's sorrow, her entire, basically all of the witches, her unit. So, because this is, she was in military clothing. So this is after the fact
back in the Salem days.
Yes, well, but it was also after after the Salem Accord had happened,
right?
Because they were in military, they were fighting as military, but they had won a battle and she left or something and came back. And when she came back, they had been completely annihilated.
Her entire company had been slaughtered.
Everyone. And we're talking like a lot of fucking people that she was, those were her sisters. That was her family. That's who she had been. I mean, in this point in her story, she had just done the Salem Accord. She had just fought really hard to make witches safe. And then she, you know, turns a corner basically and discovers that all these people she loves are dead. And it caused her so much pain.
But it was such a beautiful scene.
Oh, it's the most beautiful scene in the whole series.
It's being recounted through a visionary experience that the mycelium, whom the witches refer to as mother, the mycelium, the mother, is talking to Rael. And in her visionary experience, she sees her dead mother. And so she's actually able to connect with her mom through, quote unquote, the mother, through the mycelial presence. And through that connection is shown the history of, you know, the mycelial and how it came about. And in the sorrow of General Alder, you know, grieving intensely, you know, for her fallen company, she sings a song of grief and a song of sorrow. And the seed sounds of that song created, it enchanted the land, and it created the mother, the mycelial network. And so, and she built Fort Salem on that ground because of it.
And, well, she didn't know, she doesn't know exactly, like at the time, she didn't know what it was. They just built it. Built it on top of it because the massacre had happened there.
Right. That's
and
true.
So
that's true.
It was it seems as though it was revealed, because this isn't explained to us, but it seems as though it was later revealed to them, because there's one witch who's obviously been there for a while, but she's kind of like the doctor. And she talks about it really being this experiment that's like, for her, has lasted like something like, sounded like 60 years or something like that. But, you know, for her, it they knew it was there, but it seemed very new in the history of Salem, I would say, or at least their awareness of it. Or at least the current awareness. I don't know. It's that hasn't really been talked about. So I'm not going to infer. You know what? I'm not going to infer. I don't know when they, but I do know that the it was built there because of the massacre. That I remember, because that was like,
that I probably just assumed that it was because of the mycelial, but maybe they just discovered it later. And but they've been working with the mycelium for a long time, but it's still a mystery to all of them. So that's
right. Well, and so the big thing was also when basically Rael's like, well, why me? Like, why do you want me to be the witch bomb, essentially? And she's told, and this, I don't think it's here, I think she's maybe even earlier than this point, but she's told by the mycelial network, because basically there's a war coming and everybody wants power except for her. So she's chosen to be essentially the vessel or the weapon, yeah, essentially for the power of this huge mycelial network, essentially, that lives underneath Fort Salem, that
which is
created
revealed
from
to
the
be like
of,
also yeah. It's also where it's dead witches.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
it's like all of the consciousness of all the witches goes there. And
so it's like this collective consciousness. It's like an ancestral kind of collective consciousness, right, but it's all witches from, you know, different. Yeah. It's trippy. Yeah,
it's pretty awesome. And I'm sure they'll get more into that in season 3. At least I would hope so. They since better. Season 3 is supposed to be our last season.
I know. Okay. So after that, so we find this out. It's a beautiful scene. Everybody go definitely check it out, if you haven't already. But then after that, the season finale essentially is the Camarilla again. So they're fighting on Fort Salem. That's, you know, again, gets revealed on the news. And then everyone's kind of forced to make some really intense decisions. One of which is Adil has totally, like, his sister is attacked. While they are being attacked by the Camarilla, are attacking Fort Salem, his sister has come at some point to kind of visit him and kind of figure out what to do next. And also trying to kind of convince him to like come back. And she judges him because it's obvious that he has committed an act of murder. He, you know, it's on his face, it's in his energy. And she's like, you've become violent. Like, how could you do this? She's very judgy about it. And then, you know, while she's there, the Camarilla attack, and one of them breaks into her room and is using his little voice, you know, mute thing, and it comes very close to killing her, despite the fact that she looks like a little girl and, you know, all that. He doesn't care. He's going to kill her. And luckily her brother Adil comes in last minute and basically just like decimates the guy. Like it's because he's awesome and powerful. And she realizes in that moment,
that's not how it happened though.
Oh, okay.
It's the opposite. So he's already like killed people, you know, the Camarilla. And so she has been, like you said, really judgy of him, because she knows that he's taken a life. And, but then the Camarilla break in and one of them is about to kill Adil right in front of her. Like he's stabbed as I recall. And she is just like shocked and horrified and angry. And she decimates the guy. He just becomes like molten rock and just like melts.
That's right. I had it backwards.
And so then she understands, you know, she was like, wow, you know, I thought I was going to lose you.
Yeah.
And so, and then,
but also that these people have no like mercy in them. Like they're not
right.
There's something very wrong with these people who want to murder and destroy, you know, witches.
Yeah. Like there's, and if really you don't something stop them, on. They'll just kill everyone.
They're just going to keep, because they don't have discretion. Yeah. Thank you for correcting me on that. Cause that's, yeah, that was a big moment. And that's, so yeah, so that, so, you know, they end up making, you know, obviously this awareness that they got to do something too. So it's this really unifying moment, but it also has this baggage of, finding out that, well, the vice president knew about the attack. He knew that it was going to happen because he is a member of the what? The Camarilla. And it sounds like he's a new recruit. It seems to me that like when they found out that his daughter was a witch and she got brought into the military, that's probably when the Camarilla, you know, approached him about joining. But he sacrificed his own daughter for,
yeah, that was heartbreaking,
for this whole thing to happen.
And you know, it was extra heartbreaking because you could tell that obviously it bothered him, but it didn't bother him enough to not effectively murder his own daughter.
Well, know? No, and it's also sounds like it's political. Like it was also to right. further his political career. Yeah,
exactly.
And, shady shit.
Pretty horrible. But you know, but yeah, that was pretty horrifying. But of course, now he's kind of behind the government end of things, of wanting to prosecute the coven members who killed his daughter, you know, in self-defense. But of course there's the video footage and we don't have the context for it. And so now the government wants to put on trial Abigail and Rael and Tali. And you know, now Petra Bellwether, who is now in charge of the army, yep. This does not sit well with her.
No, no, it does not. And I don't blame her, because her daughter was literally acting to save everybody.
Right.
And
so they were praising her. They were heroes. They were regarded as heroes.
Yeah.
Within the army. You saved everybody. And then now it's like, oh, and now the government is calling you murderers and they're going to take you away. And and the military usually deals with its own. But of course, the president says, well, that's not going to happen now.
Yeah.
And so now they're like, oh, we've been part of the government, basically, you know, for 300 years. Maybe that's now being called into question, is what it seems like.
With
the events of the finale here.
So they are in. So it's like basically the final scene is they are in a bus being taken to trial, essentially,
mm-hmm. where it's under arrest,
obvious that they are going to be convicted, you know, and used as an example. And they are sprung by a combo of the Spree and the military. And they are, thanks to the Spree, they are able to kind of find their way out of that. We don't know what's up. We don't, because this is how it ends, right? So this is a very touching moment. Rael and Scylla kind of get to have more of a let's figure us out kind of a moment. And
yeah,
it's very sweet.
Love them.
I do too.
I love ridiculous. Them so much.
It's absurd. But yeah, so it's a good it was a good finale for the season, but I'm so glad it wasn't the series finale. Like, I'm glad we do get a third season, because I need it to be wrapped up. I need like this stuff to like, yeah, because there's still questions I have. There's still things I want to know about. Okay, so in season two, who was your favorite character, like main character?
Oh, General Alder. I just really felt that she went so far. You know, I mean, yeah, she's flawed, but I just felt even more this season that she had so much on her shoulders, you know, that other people couldn't possibly understand. And yeah, she was flawed and she made, you know, some mistakes, some of them horrible. But I did feel that she's certainly not beyond, you know, redemption. Even when her power was given up and she passed the power to Petra, as soon as they were attacked, she showed up and just said, "What can I do? How can I help you?" Because of her sense of duty.
That was beautiful.
And so it was not, you'd expect, oh, well, fuck you, because, you know, I've been embarrassed or, you know, whatever, this ego thing. She was so beyond that. You know, she was, no, it was duty first. And so I have to say that she's my favorite character for this season. I mean, I love them all, don't get me wrong. But I just really, there's something about that in particular that just really spoke to me.
I'm tied, and I'm sure you're going to be shocked, but it really is Anastasia and Scylla. I think those two combined was like, I loved, because each, there were, I don't want to say like four or five big plots and things that were weaving in and out, but that was the one that I just kept wanting to go back to. And I would get annoyed when anything other than the mushrooms were being talked about. And so like, I'm like, I was just, all right, come on, get over it. Let's just get back to what they're doing. Like, so I really just loved that combo. I loved this idea that you had this kind of, I don't want to say rogue military agent who was working with, you know, this supposed terrorist, well, no, definitely terrorist, to overthrow and infiltrate an ancient secret order to kill all witch. I just think it's fascinating. So I am here for that. And I really loved those two. So I think those two are my favorite, even though, of course, I have a special place in my heart for the three main characters. I particularly loved that storyline. So meh. So there's that. So let's wrap some favorites up from the whole series before we are done with this episode, because I'm this is going to be a long one, I can tell. Okay, so what was your favorite spell in the whole series? Like, what was your favorite, like, oh, that's awesome? Oh,
man, I don't know. I really did like the Samhain episode when they would light their candles, and the whole thing was, you light your candle and send forth a guardian, you know, to bring back, you know, your spirit. And they would light these candles, and then it looked like a tarantula spider or some type of spider would crawl out of it. That just seemed so cool to me. I don't know. I did like, just because of the fanfare of it all, towards the very end with Scylla, you know, where she came up with a way to basically, she starts a magical flash mob, you know, and she's using the sound of a raven to do it. She calls it Morgan's Whisper.
Yeah. And I think that's going to play out next season in a big way, because she teaches it to the lady who was Rael's mom's friend. She teaches her that.
Magda,
yeah. Because they have to protect themselves from the spree. So she teaches her how to do that. And she, of course, picked that up because she figured out what Nick de Botton was doing with the bats. And so I think her doing that and that being introduced the way that it was, it's really setting it up for something big to happen. I'm excited to see what that is. Cause it was puppeting, but on this huge scale.
It was on a grand scale. So they basically had this just, you know, a courtyard of people going about their days on at lunchtime or whatever. And with a few caws from the raven, suddenly everybody drops what they're doing and they couple up and they just start this choreographed dance. You know, it's a magical flash mob, you know? And I just loved it. First of all, cause it was just quirky as hell, you know? But yeah, it's obviously going to be, dare I say, weaponized, you know, for season three, because of exactly what you were saying, you know, because Magda says, how can we use it against the Camarilla?
Right.
You know, so it really leaves that open. What are you going to see? Is it still going to be a magical flash mob? Are we going to, somehow flash mob to death the Camarilla? We don't know. We'll have to tune in next season and see.
Well, but you can get them to all, you know, stab at each other and things. Like, it, there's so many things you could do with your.
That's just quirky, but yeah.
Well, yeah. No, I think the way that she presented it was this very like, oh, look at the magical flash mob happening.
Right. That's true.
But like, I really think it's more like, imagine what you could do with that. Yeah.
It was very intricate. So
yeah, there was spinning. Okay. So I think for me, my favorite was, it's actually not so much a spell as more of a spell technique, I would say, which actually leads me into my next thing. My favorite is the bottling of the voice.
Oh, I hear you.
That is cool. And so when I, so I was inspired by that very much. And so I started doing something, which leads me to my next thing. So this is something that for people who are following, this is what the spree would do. They would kind of bottle their voices and then you could break it and release it. And then you'd have, you know, this basically this magical bomb that would go off, or all kinds of interesting things were happening with that. But I loved that idea. And so I actually started with just the last jar that I made, last spell jar that I made, I sung into it instead of blowing into it, you know, like to like activate it and get all the things going. I sung into it. And so
that's awesome.
Yeah. So,
I mean, that was one of the reasons I loved the magic in this show anyway, is because it did rely so heavily on the voice. And that's something that I do in my personal practice, is I use the voice. And sometimes I will just hum or sing while I'm intending, you know, something to happen magically. And so that kind of really spoke to me as well. But I haven't sung into a jar, but maybe I will have to try that now. That's a good idea.
Yeah. So just, you know, so that brings my next thing. Was there anything in it that you felt inspired by that you could use in your craft?
Well, I mean, I just think the emphasis on the voice, it also, in that way, it reminded me actually, Devin, of rituals that you and I did publicly several years ago at Pantheacon, you know, where we actually used kind of the polyphonic tones in order to do particular invocations and whatnot. And so that's always been something that has really interested me, you know, like magical singing and using the voice as a musical instrument and not always singing words, you know. So that was something that I thought was really intriguing to me, just on a grander scale now being kind of played out in this fantasy world. This element of magic that I actually personally connect to. Obviously, I don't have extra vocal cords or anything like that, you know, but the idea that sound, you know, can create different magical effects, I think is absolutely spot on. And yeah, so I found that particularly inspiring.
Yeah, totally. I'm right there with you. I really liked it. I think, honestly, I think anybody could watch this show. And so like, so let's give our final thoughts on it. Let's be real here. So on a scale of like one being, like, so we have to create a scale here on the spot. So on a scale of 1 to 10, Jesus, Devin, Jesus. So on a scale of 1 to 10, let's say 1 being, what's the most lamest magical like television show that's ever existed?
The lamest?
Yeah. What's the lamest thing?
I'm going to get banned. I'll get canceled if I say
it's okay. No, it's okay.
I really could not,
do it.
Well, you know, I'm sure there's worse ones because I haven't seen a lot of them, but, I really did. I'm not a fan of Charmed.
Okay. That's yeah. Oh yeah.
I was a Buffy fan. And when by the time I got to Charmed, I was like, oh, this just makes me wish I was watching Buffy.
Okay. How about this instead? Cause I think we will get canceled if we do that. Cause we're going to have to review Charmed and I have different thoughts than you do, but, okay. So
I didn't hate it, but
you know. On a scale of, okay. So we'll say if 1 is Nicolas Cage's Wicker Man and 10 is,
I just threw up in my mouth a little.
And 10 is Game of Thrones. So it's just from a magical, like, cool, awesome.
But not the final season.
But not the final, like, 4 episodes of Game of Thrones. But if we were talking about, like, from on that scale. So on a scale of Nicolas Cage to Game of Thrones, what is, where would you place Motherland Fort Salem?
Oh, my God. On a scale of Nicolas Cage to Game of Thrones, I'm going to have to say that I don't know what that means, but no, it's up there. It's not Game of Thrones level. Just because Game of Thrones, it was like epic and expensive. But it's up there. If Game of Thrones is like a 10, I'd say, I mean, it's a solid to me 8.5. I would say 8.5.
Okay.
And the only reason I'm not giving it like a 10, is just I don't know exactly why I'm not giving it 10. You know, it's some pieces felt maybe a little rushed.
Well, you don't have to. I mean, that's, you know, you're not, you have to be a critic about it. I mean, it's something you love, you enjoy it. To compare it to Game of Thrones, obviously, is a very intense thing. But
I mean, that's just a terrible apples thing to and do oranges. To
I know. I'm on a scale of Nicolas Cage to Daenerys Targaryen, where would you put Force? No. But so you'd say you would give it a solid, like just on a scale of 1 to 10, you'd give it a solid 8, 8.5. You're saying
8, 8.5. I mean, you know,
okay.
It could be a 9. It depends. It also depends on the particular episode. There's definitely like my favorite, you know, episodes are up there in the 9.
Right.
You know, so, right.
I would give the overall series, I would say 7.5, 8. That's what I would say.
Right on.
But my, yeah. But I also like, yeah. So, you know, there's that. So that all being said, I do recommend it. I think it's something that people would like. I think it's something people would enjoy. It isn't kitschy. It isn't Hogwarts, you know, it's none of that kind of stuff.
Right.
So you really get something unique with it. And I think that the take with the military, I think it's totally, if witchcraft existed in that sort of way, that is exactly what would have happened. Like without
it seems
question.
Totally doable.
Yeah.
And I want to say for legitimate. The crowd, because I know that there was a lot of in the real witch community that were not open to watching this show because of the military aspect. Oh, and I want to watch militarized witches and blah, blah, blah. And I will say, I still want to say, give it a chance, because there's even some now at the end of season 2, maybe not as much love and trust for the military. You know, it seems more balanced and more
well,
real.
Just the whole series
is world building.
The whole series questions the military. Like that's that's what is happening throughout the whole series. So if you are somebody who is,
you start with like the wild eyed kind of starry eyed child wonder of these new recruits, you know, for the most part, you know, so you kind of see the world through their eyes. It's duty and this is important and everything. And then we see that systematically getting chipped away and remolded as the series progresses. So I think it's a pretty fair and balanced view. And again, the world building, just this alternate world, I think is pretty fascinating. One of the things that really strikes me just visually about the show is when they would show the White House. And in this world, the White House is in the middle of like this big, luscious green park. And it really strikes as something that shows that the world is really different, right? That things have really gone a different route in this alternate world. So what else is different? You know, I wonder, because of course the real White House, you know, today is like in the middle of a city, you know, and there's all this, you know, all these constructions around it and all this. And here it's just like this beautiful, serene, almost foresty, you know, type of setting. So it gives you this, a different feel just for the energy of the world they've created.
I will say, and I think this is the testament of what makes a series or a movie or anything good, is that you would like to explore the universe more outside of the story.
Exactly.
And this is definitely one of those places.
And that's where I feel like those fan, that's where I feel like these fan theories might come into play. Like maybe there will be Motherland something else. There will be a different type of story, maybe not these characters, maybe not this particular, you know, set of issues, but something else that takes place in this universe. I'd be really open to that. I'd be really excited. And if nothing else, I know that there's going to be a good amount of fanfic out there, you know, for this. I'm seeing some of that on my Twitter feed now, and I have to say I'm here for it. So I'm loving all the connections and all the queer connections, you know, that people are making with the characters. You know, we talked about obviously Scylla and Rael, but there's also that connection between Tali and Alder, you know, that at times is like strikingly sensual, you know, strikingly erotic without it ever crossing any lines, you know, but you get this real intense, this is a sensual, intimate connection that these two women share, you know? So I really think it's so luscious and it really has something to offer everybody without it being too homogenized. You know, it definitely has its own vision and its own way of viewing the world. It is pretty unique. And so that's why it's one of my favorite shows. It really offers us something different.
Okay. So our combined score is an 8. So there you go. 8 out of 10, Modern Witch approved. Go watch Fort Salem, Motherland, Fort Salem. It is definitely something that you, it's worth your time to invest in. And again, we like it. We will come back when season 3 is over. We'll wrap up season 3 and just kind of do a whole overview of it. But I am so excited we finally got a chance to do this, Storm, because this was on our list for a really long time.
Really long time. And that translated to a really long episode. But I'm sure you'll do your editing magic.
Very long. editing but, it is going to be a thing. Yeah.
I am sorry.
It happens. Okay. Well, everybody, thank you so much. And make sure to join us tomorrow. And there's going to be another drop. And I'm not going to say what it is, even though I know what it is, because I want you to be surprised. It's like an advent calendar for podcasts. So lots of love to you guys. Happy solstice. And we'll see you on the flip side.
Yeah, that was it, folks. So that was a 3-hour long deep dive into, of course, Motherland, Fort Salem. It is a good series. I very much enjoy it. It's something that I'm looking forward to seeing in the 3rd season. And of course, when that happens, I'm sure Storm and I will end up coming back on and doing a thing about that. So stay tuned for that good stuff, folks. But it is Podmas, so, you know, we're going to keep the ball rolling, and tomorrow you're actually going to get a behind-the-scenes look at what we do in our Patreon, and you are going to get to witness, behold, the majesty of Danielle Dionne, who wrote this fantastic book on magical mediumship. And so we're actually going to share with you part of that discussion that we do, that's usually a Patreon-only discussion, but we are going to bring it to you, at least a snippet of it, because like this, it went on and on and on and on, because there was so much to talk about. But tomorrow you're going to get a little sneak peek of that. So if you like dead things, you definitely want to tune into the Modern Witch podcast tomorrow. And once again, yeah, this is Modern Witch. I'm Devin Hunter, and this is Podmas. See you on the flip side.
There are forces at work here, dark, incomprehensible forces.